morning. We're going to talk today about a number of different birds and animals and whether they are or not kosher. And depending on how far we get, we'll see that this issue is relevant even to people who are vegetarians, even if you don't eat meat. And if we really get to the very end, we'll find out that it was even already negated to almost every person here in this room already today. If we make it all the way that far, we'll see if time permits us to get that far. Okay, it was negated to all of us sitting here in the room, even to those of us who didn't even breakfast yet. Okay, if we get that far. Okay, let's start as follows. The Torah tells us that if we want to know which a fish is kosher, there's one and only one way to know if a fish is kosher. If it has caskesses, which means it has a kind of a scale, that if you pull the scale off, it comes off without ripping any skin, that means it's a kosher fish. Okay? Now, the Torah says it has to have fins also, but the Gemara says everything with scales has fins. So there's one and only one way to know that a fish is kosher. That's easy. A kosher animal is a little bit more complicated, but it's also relatively straightforward. It has to have hooves that are split all the way through, and it has to chew its cud. And again, that's pretty... you can't tell, maybe every person standing here in the room can't figure that out, whether it does or doesn't, whether an animal has split hooves and chews its cud, but it's not so complicated to figure it out. Okay? But there's another type of animal, which is birds, another species, or whatever you want to call it, birds, which the Torah doesn't tell us at all how to know which birds are kosher. All that the Torah does for birds is, it gives a list of 24 birds, which are not kosher. Okay, 24 birds. These are the birds that are not kosher. And after that list of 24 birds, Rashi even says, it tells us those 24 birds because most birds are kosher. And now, if you know those 24 birds as which they are, you can eat everything else. Okay, so if you can figure out what those birds are, and each one is not a bird, each one is a species of bird, if you could figure out what they are, you could eat anything else that you want to. But the Gemara, the Mishnayos and the Gemara give a little bit more explanation. Even the Torah lists the 24 not kosher birds. The Mishnah doesn't list those 24 birds. The Mishnah tells us that there are four signs how to know that a bird is or isn't kosher. And it also tells us once a fifth sign having to do with the shape of the eggs, how to know that a bird is not kosher. That wouldn't tell us if it is kosher. But the other four signs tell us if a bird is kosher. Okay. We're not going to go through the four signs. The one that's most important to us is that the bird has to not be a dungeon. It has to not be a predator. It doesn't attack other animals. Okay? But the Gemara doesn't tell us how do you know whether it is or is not a dungeon. Okay? One of the things is kork of under nirklaf. If a certain part of the animal can be peeled off by hand, it's very easy. You know, if you know a part of the body that is, you could sit and see if it peels by hand. Okay, you can figure that out. The Gemara doesn't tell us how to know what it means that an animal is or is not a dungeon. It's a predator that attacks other animals. So, there's a machlokes Rishonim. I don't know this well enough, but Rabbi Shechter says there are five shittos in the Rishonim. As of these four signs, how many of them do you need to be kosher? The Gemara gives a bunch of four different signs. Do you need one of them? Do you need all of them? Do you need some of them? And there's all kinds of opinions as to how many of those signs you need to make a bird kosher. The Mechaber, the Shulchan Aruch says that the simple reading of the Mechaber is you need all four of those signs in order to make a bird kosher. Okay, so it needs the four signs. It has to have a zefek, which is a crop, a little piece where the food gets caught, and a kurkavon, a niklav. It has to have an extra finger. I'm not explaining these. These bunch of different signs, and it's not a dervish. So the Shulchan Aruch says it has to have all of those signs.
The third one
has to have, I don't know which I said third. It has to have a zefek, which is a crop, has an extra finger. It has to have a kurkavon and niklav. You can peel the kurkavon by hand. The two parts of it separate by hand. And the fourth being that it has to be not a dungeon. It has to not be a bird that attacks other animals. It's not important. Okay, we're staying away from that. Okay. So the Shulchan Aruch says it has to have all of these signs in order to know that the bird is kosher. Or the Shulchan Aruch says that you could have a Maserah. You could know from people before you that the bird is kosher. I never look to see if a chicken has a kurkuman in it. Okay, and whether the kurkuman is nikkel, it's not my thing. I don't play around with dead chickens, but I have a Maserah. I know my father ate chicken, and his father ate chicken, so okay, so we know that that's a kosher bird, so that's what we eat.
Who's the first one to say the washing of Maserah?
I'm not sure. It comes from a Gemara, because the Gemara says, we'll get back to this in a second, the Gemara says that if your person is a tzayon, he's a professional who understands birds, okay, the Gemara explains that he knows what birds are, and he knows all the 24 birds, the 24 birds the Torah says are not kosher, he can tell you which birds are or not kosher. There's such a thing as a person could give over to you without actually touching a bird and looking for these signs, he can know it's kosher. The truth is, Rabbi Cohen wants to know, where does it say that? Who's the first one to say you need a Maserah? Really, it's the Torah. Because the Torah doesn't tell us how to know bird is kosher. It just tells you, these are the treif birds. Well, how am I supposed to know what a ra'ah is? The Torah says a ra'ah is a treif bird. Well, what in the world is a ra'ah? So it means that Moshe Rabbeinu picked up that bird and said, guys, this is what it is. This is a daya, and this is a ra'ah. And this is each one of the birds he picked up and said, this is what it looks like. So it's sort of like built into the Torah that a treif bird means. The way you know what a bird is kosher or treif is, because it says in the Torah, tells you. That's what you should look for. Okay. But the Ramah says, the Ramah goes with the sheet of Rashi, who brings a Gemara. The Gemara says that there was once a bird called the Tanagulta de Agma. Okay? And this bird, people thought it was not a Dairis. It seemed to be a calm, pleasant animal. They thought it was not a Dairis. And after years of eating it, they found out that the bird was a Dairis. So they found out that the bird was treif. So from the fact that they once made a mistake, and they had a bird that they thought was a kosher bird. They used the sign they thought was kosher, and it turned out the bird was not kosher. Came a minhag that we only eat birds if we have Maserah. We don't just say, well, I checked these signs and it's kosher, because one of them, whether it's a dervish, is very hard to get a handle on. It's hard to tell whether it is or is not a dervish. So they made a minhag, and the Ashkenazim followed this minhag. We only eat a bird if we have a Maserah that is kosher. Okay? Now,
what do you mean the Ashkenazim?
The Ramah paskins like Rashi that you have to have a Maserah in order to know that a bird is kosher. Okay, the Machab paskins, if you see the four signs, then it's okay. And the Ramah, who for the Ashkenazim, says that you have to have a Maserah.
Couldn't the Ramah just tell you if an animal is a Dairis or not? I mean, you watch their nature. I mean, they have experts who do this all day long.
Right. So that's the Machab Rashita. If you watch it and you know well enough whether it is a Dairis or not, then that's fine. The Gemara brings a story that people made a mistake. If the years of having an animal, a bird that they thought was kosher, that was not a Dairis, they found out that it was. So you see that you could find out, you might not be able to pick it out by yourself. That you have to be worried that you might make a mistake. You're saying, which is what we would have said before that, which is, you have to see if it's a dairy, so go check it out, whatever it takes. And we'll find an expert who knows birds. You know, a chicken farmer can tell you whether chickens attack other animals. I mean, he's watched chickens for many years, didn't he? Okay. That's a muscle case. Okay, now, the Shulchan Aruch tells us that there's one way to know. One way that he says that you could know that a bird is considered a dervish, okay, and it's not what you would have thought. It's not what you would have thought that we saw it attack some other animal. He says, if you take a stick and you put a bird onto a stick, the bird perches, that's what it's called, and holds onto the stick, it perches onto the stick with some fingers, it wraps its fingers around the stick, okay, and it puts some fingers in the front of the stick and some behind it. That's how it holds on. So the Shulchan Aruch says, if a bird perches on a stick, with two fingers in the front and two fingers in the back, that's a dervish. That's a treif bird. If it perches with three fingers in the front and one finger in the back, that's fine. That doesn't prove that it's fine, but that's just the way a kosher bird would stand on a stick would be three fingers in the front and one in the back. Okay. Now, after I saw the Shulchan Aruch, now I have such exciting things to do when we go to the zoo. Now I watch with my kids. I say, look, that one is a kosher one, and that one's a treif. Because you can see, all the birds, you never noticed this until you heard this. You never noticed how birds hold on to sticks, who knows. But now, you all of a sudden, you can see, it's interesting to watch in the zoo, to watch how the birds hold on. Two and two, or three and one. Okay? Lo and behold, 10 or so years ago, somebody was watching chickens, okay, and it turns out that we have a very sophisticated world. In our world, it used to be our grandparents, I don't know, our great-grandparents, when they wanted to feed a chicken, they took a chicken out of the yard. When I was a bachur learning in Mir, okay, I lived in a diva, in an apartment on the second floor, and the people downstairs had chickens running around the yard, okay, and every couple days there were some eggs laying in the yard, and that was what they ate for breakfast. And I guess when the chickens had over, you overtaking, stayed their welcome, they shackled them and ate them. You know, so that was, that's how they raised chickens. But nowadays we're much more sophisticated. We have special birds that are for eating, and different birds that are for laying eggs. Okay, for whatever reasons, these birds are designated that they're good for eating, and these are, and the birds that we use for laying eggs are called white leghorn chickens. Okay, that's a certain breed of chicken that they bred a certain way that they're great for laying eggs. I don't know what there is to be good about laying eggs, but kaka, that's what they, this kind of breed. So somebody went to a farm. Someone there went to a farm, watched these chickens laying eggs, and lo and behold, they're sitting there with two fingers in the front and two fingers in the back. Okay, he's watching these chickens. So the whole world, literally the whole world, maybe not in India, but the whole world is eating eggs from white leghorn chickens, and the guy says, these chickens are not kosher. Okay, we all eat those chickens. He says, what do you mean, chickens are? We all know chickens are kosher. He said, no. Because we bred, all kinds of things were bred in to make this special breed called the white leghorn chicken. And all of a sudden, he looks and lo and behold, this chicken's got two fingers in the front and two in the back. So, the first time this halacha came up, it was dealt with, I believe, very professionally. He brought this to Rabbanim, to Yisrael Shaila, rather than put up posters in the street. They brought the Shaila to Rabbanim. The Rabbanim, including the Dayanim from the Eda Haredes, went to go see what was going on, and they found the following. When you take these white leghorn chickens, and they're in some kind of a difficult stock position, or they're just trying to get themselves comfortable, they sit with two fingers in the front and two in the back. But they say, I never saw it, but they say that these birds don't look happy and comfortable and at peace when they're sitting like that. When they get settled down, once they're in a nice, comfortable position, they sit like every other chicken, with three fingers in the front and one in the back. Okay? So thankfully for us, so the guy who saw it the first time, saw a bird that were uncomfortable. And I mean, I can only imagine what these, we frightened to think of what the chickens are like, you know, sitting all cooped up, literally cooped up, you know, waiting to lay eggs. So they're uncomfortable, and when they're uncomfortable, they sit like that.
It's LSS.
What?
It's LSS.
What does that mean?
Leghorn stress syndrome.
Okay. Okay. So then the people still were starting to wonder, well, wait a second. Maybe, you know, the Shulchan Aruch says if it goes two fingers in the front and two in the back, it's treif. So maybe if it ever does that, that makes it treif. So they went to watch how doves sit. Dove is, everybody knows, is a kosher bird, and they haven't been bred to lay eggs just so. And lo and behold, doves do the same thing. When they're not happy, you put them onto a very thin wire, or you put them like on a slant, you make them in a way that's not comfortable, they do the same thing. They put two fingers in the front and two in the back, but when they get settled down and happy, they're three and one. Okay, so that was settled. The issue came up again a couple of years ago, this time not as responsibly, and somebody else saw it, and you know, the whole world, all of a sudden, there were notices that you can't eat eggs, and you know how these things go. But since it had been settled many years beforehand, they quickly put this guy back into his cage, and everybody was happy. Okay. So we're finished with leghorn chickens. Okay, so we passed that. So I had said at the beginning that we, in Mirz Hashem, if we make it to the end, I don't know if we're going to have time, we're going to find out that the shear is negate even to people who are vegetarians. But and even the people who didn't eat breakfast, it said that almost everybody in this room was negate to already. So the people who were eating eggs was part of their breakfast, they already, you know, were yotze, the halacha lamaisa. If they had something for breakfast, some of the people, the Danish, have some eggs in it. You're ready to be yotze, you learn something while you're allowed to eat the Danish. Now we move to another shaila, which is turkey, which is what brings us here on Thanksgiving. What do we talk about? About turkey. The Rama said, this is a well-known question. The Rama said that we hold that in order for a bird to be kosher, you can't use the signs of knowing whether a bird is kosher. You have to have a messiah. You have to know, someone told you that this is a kosher bird. Okay? And the question on this is that turkey is quintessential New World bird. It's a bird that didn't exist in the old world, in the East. It only existed in North and South America. So that means is... Excuse me?
Can't be a
Masaira. How could there be a Masaira? I eat turkey because my father eats turkey. But I know, I'm smart enough to know, that if we go back far enough, it didn't start from a Masaira. Moshe Rabbeinu didn't hold up a turkey to these people to say to them, turkeys are kosher or not, because there weren't any turkeys where he lived. There might have been turkeys, but there weren't any animal turkeys around there to show people what they look like. So how could I have a Masaira that a turkey is kosher when that Masaira, we know that it's built on nothing? Okay, but yes.
It's a question, maybe my story as well. I always thought of the story of the shloch dangling out there, that he saw that there was a Masaira going back to the shloch, which was in Europe, that he had a Masaira that the turkey, maybe it's a wrong story. It's
that what?
Inaccurate.
That what? That he had a Messiah that was kosher.
That, no, that he actually saw that the turkey was a Doris.
That it was a Doris.
It's a predatory type of bird.
So it's not kosher.
Right.
So you're making things worse for us.
Well, what I'm saying is that story doesn't make any sense because you're saying that they didn't happen where the shlaw was.
I'm sorry, I have to ask my mother when the shlaw lived. I don't know when he lived to tell you whether he did or didn't have turkeys. They've had them for many hundred years. I don't know when he lived. Okay, I don't know. I'm not a historian. Okay, but there's a bigger question. You may have heard this question as how could a turkey be kosher? But I have a bigger question. There are many tshuvas have been written about why turkey is kosher. Okay, but there's something very unusual about these tshuvas, which is all of these tshuvas are written a couple of hundred years after people were already eating them. Every single tshuva has the exact same style. It's like they all have the same format. The style is like this. Everybody eats this bird. Why do we eat this? I say, here's a whole bunch of reasons people have told me why you should eat it. Nah, they're all wrong. Okay, all these reasons, nah, I don't like all those reasons. And then the end of the tshuva is, so I have a reason why the bird is kosher. Okay, and then the next tshuva is, why is everybody eating this bird? And he tells you all the reasons why it's no good, and then he tells you, no, and I have my reason why it is good. Okay, but so for me, a bigger question is, not one question is, how can you eat it without a Messiah? But a bigger question is, where was everybody? How come for hundreds of years people were eating this bird, and it wasn't until later that people started like waking up with the Shiloh? You know, when they created microwaves, it didn't take very long for there to start being tshuvas about using microwaves on Shabbos and for Bishalakim and all kinds of Shiloh that could be negated to a microwave. You would be surprised if it took 500 years for someone to be some Shilohs or tshuvas about microwaves, because when something comes up, people have Shilohs about it and it comes into the tshuvas farm. Well, how come there's no tshuvas about this for hundreds of years after people were eating? And every tshuva starts with, everybody eats this thing. Well, what are we doing for? They start asking the question. So we're going to see the answers. We're going to break the answers into four groups. But we're going to see if these answers can answer both questions. One is, how can we eat it without seemingly it has no Messiah? And second of all is, where is the people, are the people answering the shayla? Where are the people asking and answering the shayla? Okay, so the first, sort of the four types of answers, the first one is, there are some people who say, the question is so good that there is no answer. There are people, Shlomo Kluger didn't eat turkey. And Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky is known that he, or maybe parts of his family, don't eat turkey. They say, it doesn't have a Messiah. Don't give me all kinds of, you know, unusual answers. You'll hear some unusual ones. That's why it would be kosher. He says, I know that the Messiah that I might have is wrong and broken, it's incorrect, so it's not kosher. That's it. That's one mahal that says the question is so good that there is no answer to the question. Now, another answer, which is also sort of, if you think about this, you'll probably come up with this answer yourself, is I told you that the Torah says there are 24 non-kosher birds. Not only that, Moshe Rabbeinu showed the Yidden what those 24 birds are. He picked up each one of them up, and he told them, this is what a duchifas is. I haven't a clue what a duchifas is, but Moshe Rabbeinu did, and he picked them up, and he said to the guys, this is a duchifas, and it's not kosher. Well, there were no turkeys around that time. Now, we could imagine Moshe Rabbeinu, you know, being able to pull one out of his hat, and he somehow was able to get a turkey, right? Moshe Rabbeinu was not what we are. But the Gemara says that a person who knows there's such a thing, there were people who knew all 24 trace birds. Okay, they were a Moshe Rabbeinu. There were people at times who knew all 24 birds. Okay, those people never saw a turkey. So
how do you know that?
Because turkey is like the prime example of a New World bird. It only existed in the New World. It only existed in North and South America. Before Columbus came here, no one had ever seen a turkey. Now, again, it might be that there had been turkeys 1,000 years before that, and then they all got wiped out, and they were only left. But the way the whole world believes is that turkeys were only in the New World, and it didn't exist in the Old World. I mean, in Europe and Asia, Africa. So how could it be that Moshe Rabbeinu, you say, well, since Moshe Rabbeinu didn't have one of those birds, and for sure people in the Gemara didn't have those birds, so we know that it has a Messiah that it's kosher, because I know it's not one of those 24 birds. Because
definitively,
the Moshe Rabbeinu
didn't pull out of
it. So you're right. Moshe Rabbeinu, we know his kashas are Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu is, you know, Moshe Rabbeinu. But the Gemara says there are people who can know all 24 birds. That means it doesn't have their names in the Gemara, but it was within reason that someone could do that. And the Gemara says, and if you know all 24, you can eat anything else. Okay, so that means there were people around. Now, how could those people, that means the guy could say, they can have a in the Babylonian art scroll, a chumash, it had pictures of all the 24 birds. Like, there were people who knew what those birds looked like. So they didn't have any turkeys in there. So again, if you don't, if it's even one that you don't know, you can't eat, because maybe it's that one that you don't know. Okay. So that's one angle. People try to say, this. So I don't know that it has a Masari River, but it's sort of, by default, through the back door, I could say that it must be kosher. Okay? But there's two reasons why I think that that's not correct. Excuse me. One is, there are 24 birds, but the Gemara says that one of those birds, these are not 24 birds, these are 24 species of birds. The Gemara says that one of those birds had 100 members to its species. There were 100 varieties of this species, okay? Now, the Gemara doesn't say how it is that a person knows what the species are, but my guess is, but this is just a theory, that when a person knows the 24 birds, he doesn't have to have seen all 100 varieties of each species. What the person has to do is like this. When he sees, let's say we have a bird, a chicken. Okay, when all of us, when we see a chicken, we know what it looks like. If we see a white chicken and a brown chicken, do we realize that those are the same thing? Yeah, we come on. Okay, there's a white and brown. That one's a little bit fatter, it's a little skinnier. So there are ways to understand what's in the species and what's not. No one thinks that a cat and a chicken are from the same species, right? We know that they're different. So part of the expertise of knowing the 24 birds is to know how to know what's in the species and what's not in the species. When the Torah says that this kind of a bird is trait, well, I know what the main one is, what like the prime example of that one is. But how do I know when I see another bird, is it part of that species or not? So part of the skill of knowing the 24 species is, I know the species and I know how to decide if you're in or you're out. Okay? The Darkei Teshuva has a dozen shilas of people who try to say something is or is not in the same species. What happens if it has the same but it has longer legs? What happens if it has a black beak instead of a red beak? 100 different varieties. So part of the expertise of knowing whether something is or is not one of those birds is to know how to extend the species and say this is part of that species or it's not part of it. So that's part of the expertise, okay? Which means that even if the person never saw the actual turkey, if the turkey would have walked in, he would have said, oh, turkey, I know that turkey. That's part of the species of some other one of the trefoils. He could have known the 24 trefoils, and if he would have seen the turkey, he would have said, oh, it's an otoliths. Okay, it's one of those. It's a part of that species called whatever it is, because he knows the 24, you know, heads, and then from those 24, he knows how to say what's in the group and what's not in the group. Okay, so the fact that he may have never actually seen a species, a turkey, doesn't mean that he couldn't have known that turkey is one of those 24. He may have been able to pick it up. Okay, that's one question. And the second is that there are three birds that I know of, okay, that are also New World birds, not just turkey. Three other birds that are New World birds, and those birds are definitely not kosher. Okay, the bald eagle, the famous bald eagle, peregrine, I think I pronounced that, falcon, and an osprey. Okay, those birds are definitely, those are not kosher birds. I mean, we can see from the simonim that those are not kosher birds. Well, those birds also don't exist in the, so to speak, the old world, in Asia and Africa. They don't exist there. So if you tell me that the fact that a bird wasn't in the old world means that it's not kosher, that must be kosher, really? Yes, sir. How are you going to eat a peregrine fat? How are you going to eat that bird? You know, the answer is, like we said, if a person would have seen an osprey, he would have said, oh, osprey, I never saw one of these before, but it's part of some other group. He would have put it into one of those groups. So if you would have seen a turkey, how can we know that a turkey wouldn't fit into one of these 24? Again, unless you know the 24, and you know how to place things into the groups, you can't know that it's not kosher. Okay, now, this is not such a strong answer, but if we would think about it, this answer would maybe have explained why no one answered Shiloh for a long time. The people realized this thing, but as soon as they told them this is a New World bird, they would have said, oh, New World bird, no problem, easy, that is most. Maybe yes and maybe not, you could have said that. Okay. With the second question, which is, how come no one answered Shiloh?
Maybe there was the eagles and the osprey and the
stature
and strength, you use other vice versa for the turkey.
That what?
That's closer.
No.
Those are characteristics that don't apply to those three birds, obviously the turkey doesn't have.
No. Because we're stuck. The Ramah says that Ashkenazim have to have a Maserah. Doesn't help if you prove that it's kosher. I can prove that it's not kosher. But I can't use proofs to decide that it is kosher. I can only use proofs to decide that it's not kosher. If it is kosher, I'm stuck. I have to have a Maserah also. Okay. Now, a third group of answers to these questions is that really, turkey has a Maserah. sarcasm, sir. I just told you can't have them, sir. So, some people said that there's a bird called the great bustard. Okay, now none of us ever had it because it's an endangered species. Okay, it doesn't. It's that no one eats this anymore, or no one legally eats this anymore. And the people who said is, you know, turkeys look really like great bustards. Okay, no, yes or no? I don't know. To me, all the birds look the same. So I don't know whether it does or doesn't. But so the people came up with that, and they said, no, really, it's almost the same as another bird. And therefore, it probably is kosher, which doesn't sit very well with us because, again, we've been brought up, okay, maybe incorrectly, been brought up that turkey is such an unusually different bird that it's like really like a, it's a paradigm of, you know, American bird. It didn't exist. It's like such a new thing. Okay, maybe yes or no. Okay. Some people said that since people have been eating turkey for so long, It would be mitzvah laws. How could you say that turkey's not kosher? You're going to get up and say turkey's not kosher? You know how many people have been eating how many hundreds of years people have been eating turkey for? Is that a nice thing? Could you say such a thing?
Well, so that was a shiloh.
What?
That was Ramah. They're eating it for hundreds of
years. Right. So this answer is sort of like, it's not really a funny thing. We have a Messiah now. We've been eating it for hundreds of years. So it's like sort of like closing your eyes, right? You're closing your eyes and say, oh, we really have a Messiah because they've all been eating it, and how could you say they were doing the wrong thing? Now, I am in favor of saying we should not be, you know, besmirching the people before us and saying that they all didn't know what they were doing and we're the smartest ones around. But we need to come up with some kind of an answer, okay? And the most unusual answer in this group of answers of how did they get, that there really was a Messiah for Turkey, is that when Jews first came to America, they met members of the Aseres HaShvatim, and the members of the Aseres HaShvatim told them, the 10 tribes that had been kicked out of Eretz Yisrael, and they met members of the Aseres HaShvatim, and they told them that it was kosher bird. They said, we have a Messiah, that's a kosher bird. What do you say? They had a Messiah from Moshe Rabbeinu.
Moshe Rabbeinu.
He doesn't have problems how Moshe Rabbeinu got a turkey. So they had that Messiah, they came in there, and they came to Plymouth Rock, and there was a shtiebel there. And they met at the shtiebel of Plymouth Rock. They asked them, and they met a bunch of... What do you say? Sure, of course. Of course. Of course. What's it? I don't remember who says the answer. So Mar took Kehila Kadosh to Plymouth Rock. They came in there and they were in Turkey and they said to their father, what did you eat? When did you get this? And they said, no, the Rebbe does not. This, it's kosher. They ate it. Okay. So
perhaps they brought turkey back to Europe.
And
they asked the Shiloh.
Who did they answer Shiloh to? That's the question. How could, who was...
No one wrote about it. That's the problem. No one wrote about it until hundreds of years later.
I understand, but they probably, somebody asked the Shiloh.
Okay. But so, but
we're not quite. No one wrote it down.
Wait a second. First of all, that it's hard to say that something like this came up and no one asked the Shiloh, when it's not the, so to speak, the style, when you have something that's such an unusual Shiloh that there shouldn't be some record that there was a Shiloh went on. But also, who would they have asked the Shiloh to? That's our first question. We Ashkenazim say, in order for a bird to be kosher, it has to have a Messiah. You have to know from someone before you that it was kosher. So when I came to the rabbi, I said, Rabbi Cohen, is this a kosher bird? I said, I don't know. I never saw it before. It looks kosher, but I never saw it. I can't let you eat it. I never saw it before that it was kosher. Okay, so that we're sort of like stuck in it.
But they brought the turkey back to Europe, and they start eating the turkey in Europe, too.
Right, correct. But how could, that's the question, how did they start eating it?
It's kind of a species issue.
They've seen every species of kosher birds.
Who has?
Masuras?
No, not at all. By no means.
It's a species, so as long as the turkey dresses as some type of species.
So which species of kosher bird does it fit? It's not anything like
that.
That's like a great bustard. Maybe there was a bird around that they all knew was kosher,
right,
and they attached it to that bird. They said, you know, they just all knew that it was, it just looked so similar to that, and they thought it was kosher. So it could be that that's an answer. It could be that's an answer. But for us, again, we're biased. We've been brought up and told that turkey is so unusual, it's so different than any other bird, that's why it's such a example of a bird that's a New World bird. It had no similar bird in the West, in the East. So maybe that's wrong. Maybe they brought it home, and there was a bird that was really pretty close to it, and they knew it was kosher, and they had, okay, that could be, I can't say it's not true, but okay, we would be, maybe that'll make you be happy when you eat turkey this afternoon, but it would make us more comfortable if we knew what we were talking about, rather than just saying that. Okay. So the fourth answer, which to me I think is probably the correct answer, for better or for worse, is like this. I have a different question for you. Did anybody ever wonder why we call that kind of bird a turkey? Okay. Why do we call that bird a turkey? Okay.
what kind of funny name? I mean, if Turkey's the name of a country. We even come up to call this thing. You call it America, okay? You know, what kind of thing that they call this bird? Turkey. It's not only in English that we call it Turkey. In the Chuvash that talk about it, they talk about it as the Turkish bird, okay? And the reason. I don't know how you spell it. I'm sorry.
Well, I can't spell the country. I'm just saying.
Yeah, it looks, when you read it, it had that read to it. So where did they come up with that name from? So now I don't know for sure, but the turkey was brought back from America, back to the east, back to Europe, and one of the controlling powers at that time was the Ottoman Empire, okay, based in Turkey. And from there, it spread, they, through their control, spread it through Europe. And they brought it back with them, just like they brought corn and other things were brought back, and then from there it spread from there to the rest of Europe. So people who came across this bird called it the Turkish bird. It's like this new bird from Turkey that we've never seen before. They called it the Turkish bird. And the Kafa Chaim has Chuvash who talk about it as being the Indian bird. Okay, and which is why in Hebrew we call it Hoidu. We call it Hoidu, which is India. Why do they call it India? We call it Turkey, they call it India. You know, the other guys call it Portugal. You know, what's going on? It's because they thought, this is what Kafa Chaim brings, that people thought it came from India. Okay, so however that route made its way there, it spread from India. People thought of it as the bird from India. That's what they called it, the bird from India. So what happened is that these birds were brought there. The Yid in Poland who wanted to know if this bird was kosher, it came from Turkey, so he called up his cousins who lived in Turkey and said to them, you know, Chaim, is this a kosher bird? And he got it from Chaim. Now, I'm not just passing the buck to these people. But the point is that the Yidden who lived in Turkey and who lived in India are not Ashkenazim. Their people, they are Sephardim. When they saw this bird for the first time, what did they do? They opened up the Shulchan Aruch, and the Shulchan Aruch says, there are four ways to know whether a bird is kosher. And they poked around the bird, they watched it, they did what they had to do, and they decided that the bird was kosher. Because they, by looking at the signs, according to the Shulchan Aruch says there are ways to know these four signs. They looked at the bird, they decided it was kosher. When that bird made its first, they made the first delivery of turkeys into Poland, so the Yidden in Poland, not being so sophisticated as we are to know that the bird is a New World bird and this and that, this bird came from Turkey. This is the new bird that came from Turkey. So they sent a letter to the people in Turkey saying, this new bird is a kosher, and the Yidden from Turkey, either who lived there or they sent them a letter, said to them, yeah, it's a kosher bird. So you want to know why there's no tshuva written at that time about it? It's because they did the normal thing you're supposed to do about a bird, which is, if you get served the kind of bird, somebody asked me last week, can you eat quail? Okay, so you ask somebody else to show you, can you eat quail? You ask someone who you think knows the answer. I say to them, yeah, we have a Messiah that quail is kosher. So, is he going to write a shiloh to some gadol and say, I am quail, mutterless, and that? He asked the person who's supposed to know. The person told him, yes, it's a kosher bird. He doesn't know from quail. If he has a Messiah that it's kosher, it's kosher. So he asked the person, and you go back to the Eden in Turkey, and you say to them, Rabbani Turkey, is this a kosher bird? They say, yeah, we've been eating this bird for 50 years. We've been eating this bird, we eat this bird. And they eat it. So then the people, the way they got a Masura that it was kosher is because they asked it from where they got it from. They were not as sophisticated as we are to know this history of it came from here and it was never here. They knew it came from Turkey. They turned back to the people in Turkey and it was kosher. Okay.
What did you talk about when Turks first found and saw the bird?
Well, it came as soon as you, I mean, come on, it's Thanksgiving. Those kids go to school. It's when the Jews, when the people came to America and in the 1400s, I don't know what it was. The 1600s, they found this bird.
About pre-Ramah, really.
Yes, before the Ramah.
Because, let's look at the timeline like, let's look at the timeline like this. Expulsion from Spain, and the beginning of Western colonization of America occurred at the same time, Amish, including some Jews. At the same time, those Jews from Spain were going back to Turkey.
Yes.
And become, and they were smart, and they were settling in Western Turkey. And at the same time, about 100 years later, the Turkish influence had spread all the way to the Rhine River.
Okay.
Virtually. So, I mean, it wasn't far. The Ottoman Empire was only across the river.
Yes.
From a lot of these
okay.
Jews. And some of those Jews also went, those Sephardic Jews also went to Poland.
Thank you. Okay. I believe you. Okay. So
it's all happening okay. At the same time.
So now.
How do you define, so the people who start eating it because they went to Turkey and everything. How do you define
Masorah?
Is that a
Masorah? Okay, so now we have a question, which is just right to our next question, which is, I get, if you come in one day and you say to me, you come in and you came and say to me, can I eat quail? And I tell you, yeah, you could eat quail. Okay, so if you go, not you go to me, because we would both live here in the same neighborhood. You go to somebody and you say, you call someone up in Brooklyn and say to him, tell me, is quail kosher? He tells you, yeah, in Brooklyn we eat quail. Can you take that Messiah that he gave you to your community? That's the question. Can you take it to your community? Okay? And we'll go through that part of the Shiloh. There's lots to say. We're going to go through a little quickly through this Shiloh. Can I take a Messiah from a different community and take that on as my Messiah? And if, here in Chicago, we have chicken and some duck and turkey. We don't have that many birds that we eat. But if someone comes here with quail, can we accept someone else's Messiah that quail is kosher or that some other bird is kosher? So like this, the Shulchan Aruch says that if a person one community has a Messiah that a bird is kosher, another community is not allowed to take that Messiah. They are not able to take the Messiah from somebody else and say, since they think it's kosher, we consider it kosher also.
Who said that?
The Shulchan Aruch.
Right,
but Shulchan Aruch, you could either make a bird kosher by having the signs that it's a kosher bird, or you could use a Messiah. Did you ever check a chicken to see if it has an SBC? It has a problem. That's okay. So you didn't check it. You have a Messiah. Even the Shulchan Aruch holds you could use a Messiah. The Shulchan Aruch says when
you actually says you could use Messiah.
Yes, he does. But if you want to use a Messiah, it has to be.
The Ramah says I'm there. No, you have to.
That's correct. The Shulchan Aruch has two ways to make the word kosher: either using the signs or a Messiah. And the Ramah says no, you must use the Messiah.
Well, once you have a community that eats it, though, you know that that's not going to be one of the 24.
How do you know that?
I don't know.
Maybe they made a mistake. We're going to get to that in a second. I'll explain. You'll hear better. I'll answer your question in 1 minute. Okay. So the Shach says, the same sources that the Shulchan Aruch is using to say that you're not allowed to take a Messiah from somebody else, the Shach reads those same sources differently to say that you're only not allowed to take a Messiah if your community specifically does not eat that bird. If your community has, you know that in this place we don't eat a certain bird. Whatever kind of bird it is, we don't eat that bird. But if your community is neutral, we never heard of, no one ever thought of eating quail around here. We never ever thought of it. The Shach says, then you can take someone else's Messiah. You can only not take it if you knew Peshitta, we don't eat that bird. But if we never thought about it, it never came up to eat that bird, then you can get someone else's Messiah. So the Shach I'm saying they're arguing within the same sources that the Shulchan Aruch is bringing from. He said that that's not what they mean. If you live in a place where you have no Messiah about something, you can get it from somebody else. You could. That's what the Shach says. And Rav Moshe, there are many Achorim talk about this. Rav Moshe seems to lean in the direction of the Shach, that if you have no Messiah, you don't know, positive or negative, you could take it from them that it's kosher. Okay. However, let's even say we'll go with the Shach, that says you could take someone else's Messiah. Let's accept that. You could take someone else's Messiah. There's a question. This is the Dr. Chuba's question. What happens if, when we talk about taking someone else's Messiah, that's fine if we are two little shtetlach in Hungary, that we basically have the same way of doing things. We basically follow the same halachas and the same minhagim and the same kind. We all, our abundant basically follow the same, style in halacha. So if they tell us, the next neighborhood tells us that this is kosher, we'll take that. We can accept that, according to the Shach. He says, but what happens if we're in communities that are very different from each other? We pass things very differently from each other. In that case, would the Shach say that in that case, you're allowed to take a Messiah? Okay? And we have a prime example of the difference. We'll go through a few examples. But the prime example is, let's say an Ashkenazi wants to take a Messiah from a Sephardi, like we think may have happened with Turkey. Okay? The Ashkenazi says, I want to get a Messiah from you, Mr. Sephardi, that this bird is kosher. Well, he cheated to find out that the bird is kosher. Because he did things to find that it's kosher that I'm not allowed to do. He decided it was kosher by checking the four signs. That doesn't work for me. So, can I take his Messiah? When he tells me a bird is kosher, how do I know that he really has a Messiah back to Moshe Rabbeinu? Maybe he cheated. He went and made the Messiah by himself. He sort of looked at these four signs and he decided it was kosher. Things that I'm not allowed to do. The Shulchan Aruch says, if a bird has webbed feet, like ducks have, if it has webbed feet, it can't be a dervish. It can't attack other animals that has these webbed feet. That doesn't work. Okay, it can't attack. So, Dharma doesn't hold like that. Dharma holds if it has webbed feet, it can still be, you can't eat it. So, maybe he decided it was kosher because it had webbed feet. He decided it has webbed feet, it's kosher. We don't hold like that. So how can I take a Messiah from somebody else, if I'm an Ashkenazi, how can I take a Messiah from somebody else when that person is using methods of determining that it's kosher that I'm not allowed to use? Okay? Another example, which is going to be Negea, if we'll stay for that one. Another shot is like this. The Gemara says, kosher animal and a non-kosher animal cannot breed together and produce a viable offspring. Okay? They will not breed and produce a viable offspring. So there's a machlikus in achronim whether the same thing applies to birds. Okay? Is it possible that a kosher and a non-kosher bird would breed and have a viable offspring? And then there's a second challenge. Let's say they can breed, kosher and non-kosher birds. What would be the din of that of the child that's born? Would it be kosher or not kosher? One parent is kosher and one parent is not kosher. What would be the status of that bird? Would it be a kosher bird or a not kosher bird? Also, machlok is not right. So I hear from the neighborhood, from the next town, that they use a certain bird. Well, maybe they decided that it was kosher because it's a breed between a kosher and a non-kosher bird, and they decided that that makes it kosher. Well, that they decided that the child is kosher. And maybe my rabbi doesn't want like that. So how can I when the Shach says you can take a Masorah from somebody else, do you have to take into consideration that those people have to be the same, like running the same circles as you do? And Turkey is our example of that. If the Sephardim decided that it was kosher because they looked at the four signs and decided that it was kosher, that doesn't do the trick for me. That's not good enough for me. So could I use that Masorah that I have from the Sephardim to know that it's kosher when I'm not allowed to use it? It seems a little silly, right? Could you imagine this? I'm not allowed. Think about it. It would happen today. We bring a new bird into town, and I'd say, I don't know if I could eat it. So I say, it looks like it has all the four signs of being kosher. I don't know. So I go, Rabbi Azos, come here, please. Rabbi Azos, can you decide if this is kosher bird? Rabbi Azos says, look, yeah, it's kosher bird. I'm Sephardi. It's kosher bird. Okay, now Rabbi Azos, is this a kosher bird? Sure, David, it's a kosher bird. You can eat it now. So isn't that ridiculous? I mean, think of how silly that is, right? Rabbi Azos can't give me a Messiah when I know that he cheated to get that Messiah. Right.
Grasshopper.
A grasshopper. It's the same Shiloh. Reb Chaim Kineski asked the same Shiloh about grasshoppers. I said, whether we can take a Masorah from somebody else. Well, the question is because the people with the Masorah about grasshoppers are Sephardim. They're Temanim. And we don't do things the same way they do about grasshoppers. Then Reb Chaim Kineski has the same Shiloh. You know, if anybody ever wants to eat grasshoppers, we'll learn about it. Reb Chaim Kineski has a safer about grasshoppers. Okay? Yeah, I saw people eat grasshoppers.
No, they went to go get them, so they had a project.
Yes, correct. And I saw people eat them. Yeah.
Ashkenazim?
I saw Ashkenazim eat it. Well, no. I take that back. It was in a public forum, okay, and the Ashkenazim wanted to eat it, okay, but the Rabbanim in charge of this would not let them do it in a public forum. You could do what you want to in your house, but the public, they let the Sephardim, but the Sephardim ate it. So that's Reb Chaim Kineski has the same child, but whether you could, it's supposed to taste very good. It's hard to imagine how you could eat it, but it's supposed to taste very good. It doesn't, you know, I'm not enticed to eat it. Doesn't catch my ear. Okay, so now, I want to, this question about taking the serve from somebody else is negate our Leah child, and I'm just going to pause because I've been going on for a long time. And anybody who wants to, if you want to stay, we haven't touched Zebu yet. Okay, we have plenty to go. So if you want to listen, fine. If not, if you want to go home and play tennis, it's fine. Also, it's a do whatever you want. I'll continue with Zebu, but because we haven't touched that yet. Okay, but feel free to walk out. Okay, the question of Zebu, which at first is going to sound like it. Yeah, go ahead.
What does Zebu mean?
I'm going to explain to you what it is.
But you answered the last question. You answered the last question.
What I said is that there's a question. First of all, there's a machloikas. Let me go over that. Maybe I wasn't clear enough. There's a question whether I can get a Masorah from somebody else. Even if you hold that you can get a Masorah, there's yet another question. Can I get a Masorah if they have a different standard than I do?
So you didn't answer that.
I did not. That's a question, whether I can or not. The inclination is that I cannot. That I should not be allowed to take a Masorah from somebody else. And that's exactly why they didn't let the guy eat the grasshopper. Whatever. That has to do with the grasshoppers, is that the inclination is that I should not be allowed to take it when I know that he doesn't use the same, like you said, standard of deciding was kosher that I would use. So how can I take it from him?
I have a question on that question.
Go ahead.
Would it also apply to if you're going from one makom to another makom?
Moving in to that place?
It's a historical question because, you know, at the time that I was saying that they were bringing turkeys and then everything was going on. It was the translocation of Judaism within Europe, you know, including the Mechaber himself. His family was moving to Italy and then he moved to the Sfat. So
what's your question?
So maybe he came to a community where they did things differently.
Okay, so he had been eating it when he, the person had been eating it when he lived in Turkey.
Talking, when you go to, you know, the minhag of the community, can you adopt the minhag? Could you just say, I'm now live in a Sephardi community where everybody eats turkey, so
That's why do I have to have a masorah anymore?
That's correct, but...
No overriding halacha, in other words.
That's true. You're right. When you move into the community, you take on their minhagim. But so if we move to Morocco, we could all start eating turkey. The question is, but we don't live in Morocco. We stay in Ashkenazim, so to speak. So what do we, that's our question. That's
Has Rav Moshe addressed the question of masorah to turkey?
Not that I know.
So from the fact that they have asked Rav Moshe questions about eating turkey in general, and the fact that he has not really addressed it, must show that it is kosher. I don't know how much persuasion that is, but it definitely would reveal. I mean, if he felt that there is no masorah, he probably would answer part of the child. And if you're not...
So I don't know that he was... He probably was in his life, yes, the Shaila. We don't have a record of what he said to that. We don't know what he said to that. Right. But you're right. But the fact that he was quiet
about turkey...
No, he didn't write a tshuva. We don't know that he wrote a tshuva about turkey.
About eating turkey on...
His point is that in passing, he's assuming that it's kosher. Okay. If he could ask a Shaila about whether it's proper, not from the kashrus of it, from different... Is it proper to eat turkey on Thanksgiving? How does that relate to eating... doing what non-Jewish people do.
Right.
That gives implication. You're right. The Yehuda does the same thing, and the Yehuda or Prima Gadim about it. We ask a Shaila, what happens if a piece of turkey fell into a pot? And a whole Shaila about a possible whole Shaila, okay, giving the implication that, of course, this is a kosher, like it was like a passing. There are truths like that that give the implication that it must be a kosher bird. We're trying to understand why. We're trying to get to the understanding of why would it be kosher.
After this last point, it seems that no one knows really. It's a subject. It seems like something happened then.
Right. So,
I'm
not telling you that you shouldn't. I'm not trying to convince you tonight, turkey. We're talking about the Shiloh, what it is.
Right.
You're right that it's well accepted, except for certain groups, it's well accepted that people eat turkey, that it's kosher.
But we basically say that there are no real strong reasons.
We've gone to some different angles as to why it might be okay. We're left with sort of more questions than answers. But I'm not telling you not to eat it. I work for the CRC, and our restaurants still serve turkey. So why are you doing?
What should we eat there?
I actually noticed I took turkey out of the freezer last night. She noticed, not because of the Thanksgiving, just stuffing up the turkey. Yes.
What's the definition of masorah, though? Does it have to go back to Moshe Rabbeinu? For example, Mark mentioned before that the Ramah came after this whole Ottoman Empire, and they brought the turkeys and it's called turkey because it's called this and so forth. So they established that it was kosher, and this is before the Ramah.
It wasn't so long. It wasn't so long ago. Like the Ramah was just born when turkeys were first introduced into Europe.
The Ramah, even though we attach a lot of our minhagim to the Ramah did not create the minhagim. The Ramah recorded the minhagim. He was saying, in our community, the Shulchan Aruch was written from a sort of a Sephardic perspective, and but in our community, this is our minhag. Yeah, this is what we do. He wasn't. Yeah, his father did. No, the Mechaber and Ramah lived almost at the same time, and the Ramah was not saying news. He wasn't creating the news. He was reporting the news. I mean, he was just writing at the minhag in our place is to do like this. I don't think he established. I mean, this comes from a Rashi. So the Ashkenazim followed the sheet of Rashi in this regard. I don't think that he's the one who made up the minhag. I don't think he was just a record of it.
Now, I'm trying to remember, one of the answers is that by the time the Ramah wrote this, it was already being eaten, or by the time the Ramah was Makubo. The year the Ramah wrote the Ramah in Ashkenaz Jewry, they may not have accepted all the Ramah. Now we generally follow the Ramah. But could it be that it was already out there before the Ramah, so it would be inclusive?
Okay, so to answer the question, first of all, as has been mentioned, the Ramah lived right around the time when it was being introduced. It hadn't been around for 100 years. He wasn't talking about turkeys, but it hadn't been around for such a long time. And to answer your second question, the Ramah was the Rabban Shel Kol Bnei HaGadol. He was accepted and taken as is from the get-go. And that's why he wrote the Sefer as the Mechaber wrote the Sefer from the Sephardi. He was also, the Beis Yosef was the Beis Yosef. But for the Ashkenazim, he added on parts, and it was very well accepted. I don't.
But the thing is like this, I don't think turkey was the one that spread around. Perhaps they had birds from Turkey, and these were similar to the birds that were in Turkey. That's why we call it turkey.
Why are you saying that?
Turkey wasn't in the New World.
But by
the Ottoman Empire was not in the New World. It was Portugal and Spain.
Okay.
England.
Right, so
and maybe the Netherlands, but not Turkey, not the Ottoman Empire.
Okay.
So the reason we call it Turkey is because it was a similar to bird that we that they saw from Turkey. We thought that it was from a bird similar to the one in India.
The Turkish
I know Spanish. England.
That's why England is only English is the only country is the only language that calls it Turkey because they call it everyone else. I read this. Everyone else would call it like Indic, which is India, and Hodu because everyone thought that came from India. Really, Turkish traders brought it to England, so that's what it's called.
So it was the Jewish Turks?
So it was the Turkish traders who were
It was the Jewish Turkish traders.
Yeah, how do you know they went to the Marano, some converse of Jews or whatever,
who really wanted
to keep kosher at home, and they brought it back, and they...
Okay, we'll see if people want to... Okay, let's move on. Again, if anybody feels like they want to, please feel free. Okay, we're already done our time if you want, you know. Okay, let's just do this. We'll do this, I'll try to move on. It goes through a couple of phases, the Shiloh. Okay. This Shiloh started about 50 years ago. Okay. Before we get to a Zebu, before I tell you what a Zebu is, okay, in the United States and England, and those countries, there are two well-known breeds of cattle, of cows, okay, and they are Angus. They're called Angus and Hereford. Okay. Angus is a black cow. It's all black. It has no horns and has really great meat. Okay, the meat tastes really good to the point that places like McDonald's and Burger King, when they want to tell you that you're getting a premium hamburger, give you an Angus burger. Okay, that's like how you describe a better burger as an Angus burger. Okay, it's a better type. It seems that it's a better type of meat. The Hereford is not black. It's like reddish, brownish white. Okay, it's a more, what you more used to seeing as a cow, and that's a more, so it'd be traditional kind of cow. These cows do fine where we live. I once spent about a week in Idaho for kashrus reasons, and it was the middle of the winter, and what you see in Idaho in the middle of the winter is snow for as far as the eye can see. Okay, all the fields are covered with snow forever and ever, and standing in the middle of this freezing snow are cows. Okay, just standing there, freezing. Mama's freezing there. Mama's just freezing. But they handle it. They make it till the end of this. I mean, I guess most of them make it. They make it. Okay, they're sitting out there, Mama's. You can't imagine how they can sit. And that's what these kind of cows. They're nice and tough cows, and they can handle this. They're really good for this climate. And you sit out there and freeze death. I freeze. Okay. Now, these cows are great for us, but in tropical climates, they have a very different kind of cow. Okay, and that cow is called the zebu. Okay, it's a different kind of a cow. That cow handles heat and humidity really well. Okay, like if you live in Australia or South Africa or South America, they handle the heat and humidity very well. Okay, but the meat of those animals doesn't really taste so great. Okay, okay, we'll see how that actually is relevant. Okay, the meat from those animals doesn't taste very good, but they can handle the climates that they live in. Much like our cows can handle the climate that we live in. Okay, well, in the 1950s, people wanted to import zebu into Eretz Yisrael. Actually from, I don't know why, from Madagascar, of all places. They wanted to get it from Madagascar. So, they wanted to bring them into Eretz Yisrael, because Eretz Yisrael has a tropical kind of climate. They wanted to bring it there. And the chief rabbi, Rabbi Herzog, asked the Chazon Ish whether it was okay to bring import those animals in there to Israel. So why not? What's the Shiloh? What's the big deal? You know, so why shouldn't you? A cow is a cow. Who cares? What's the difference? Why shouldn't you think of it? And the answer is, for this, I was actually thinking of bringing pictures just for this. If you would see a picture, I have pictures if you want to see afterwards. If you see a picture of a zebu, you look at this thing and you say, it's a cow, but something's not right about this thing. Okay. First of all, it's gray. Okay. And it's got these long drooping ears. It has a hump on its back, and it's got this like extra long piece of skin hanging down from its neck down to its legs. Okay, it does. It looks like a cow, but it doesn't really look like a cow. It is a very, you know, when you see a black Angus cow and a Hereford cow, one's black and one's brown, but basically a cow is a cow. Okay, but this thing, something doesn't look right about it. Okay.
Like
a Brahma bull. Okay, Abraham and Zebu is the same thing. Two names are the same thing. I never went to the rodeo, so I'm sorry. But it doesn't look like your everyday cow. It doesn't look like your regular everyday cow. So the question is there anything wrong with this cow? I mean, well, a cow's a cow. Basically, it's a cow, but it's not exactly a cow. Something doesn't seem right about it.
You don't need, like, by the cow, though. I mean, you don't need the mesorah like you do by birds for a cow, do you?
Okay, hold, give me a second. So I came to the Chazanish and said, is there anything wrong with this cow? So the Chazanish said, nope, you can't take this cow. And the Chazanish wrote two famous letters. They're printed in the Sefer Chazanish. Many people know these letters. The Chazanish said that, before I tell you what he said, I'm going to tell you is that there are these two letters that I'm going to tell you about in a second that the Chazanish wrote. What most people don't know is that Rav Herzog also wrote letters to the Chazanish, which are printed, and the Chazanish wrote a third letter back to Rav Herzog, and that letter is also printed. Okay? These things, if you want the best place to know about this, it is a biography of the Chazanish. It's called Pe'er Hador. Okay? It's a biography, it's four volumes, so if you make it to the fourth volume, the way end, page 226, okay, so you really have to have patience, or skip, and you could find out what really went on with the Shire. Okay, and there he has the letters from Rav Herzog, he has the Chazanish's third letter, and he says like this. The Chazanish's first two letters say the following. Just like birds have to have a Masorah that's a kosher, so too animals also need a Masorah that's a kosher. It says, what kind of thing? What animals? It says in the Torah, if they have split hooves and they have two, they're good. So he says, no. It depends on how you read a certain shach, that he says, that the Chazanish says, as do some others, that the shach says that for an animal to be kosher, you have to have a masorah that is kosher. And he says, so we don't have a masorah that zebus are kosher, so therefore you can't eat it. Others read the shach very differently, that the shach is not saying that you have to have a masorah that is kosher. If you want to know if something is a behema or a chaya, with animals are split into two groups, behema and chaya, and they have differences whether you have to do kisi adam, you can eat the fats of the animal, there's certain practical differences between them. If you want to know if it's a behema or a chaya, then you need a masorah for that. But if you just want to know if it's kosher, you don't need a masorah for that. Okay? That's how most people hold. Chazanish says, from a chayadam, he learns the shach is that you have to have a masorah that an animal's kosher. So, and there are reasons why you might need that. So we're not going to talk about that. There's an explanation for that. But you would possibly need a masorah in order to make an animal kosher. So he said, no masorah and zebus. Look at this thing. I'm telling you, if you look at the pictures afterwards, something doesn't seem right about this cow. Okay, he said that's not the cow that I know about. So there's no masorah. You can't eat it. Now, so if you read in Sefer Chazanish these two letters, you think that was the end of the question. Okay, but in fact, that's not by any means the end of the story. Rav Herzog did not take this sitting down. Rav Herzog said, well, these animals live in tropical climates. And he went to Jews who had lived in India, and I think he said Iraq also, and he said to them, in your country, do they have this kind of animals? They said, yeah. He said, did you eat them as kosher? They said, yeah, we ate them as kosher. These are kosher animals. These are cows. We eat them. So he went back to the Chazanish and said, you're telling me I can't eat these cows because they don't have a Masorah? Yaha, they have a Masorah. Here's some nice from Jews from India who have a Masorah. Okay, now.
It's the same.
Yeah, it's being imported from there because these type of climates have...
No, just like, you know, Turkey was in...
From this, they're similar. These are basically the same, that kind of a cow that handles that climate. Okay, so now if we were... Okay, so he went to the Chazanish and said, see, I have a Masorah that is kosher. So the Chazanish wrote a third letter, okay, which said two things. He said, I'm going to say the second point first. The second point was, when you want to get a Masorah from somebody, the Shulchan Aruch says, you have to get it from someone who's reliable, who knows what he's doing, you know, who understands these things. And Rav Herzog seems to have preempted this point, because he makes a point in his letter of saying that they were fine, respectable, from people. Okay, that they were fine, you know, there was a firm community for hundreds of years, not thousands of years. So he said, they were fine, respectable people who told me this thing. So put that on the side for a second. The Chazanish's first point is, he says, remember I told you that the Shulchan Aruch says, you now get a Masorah from a different community. So we're not Indians, I mean, we're not people from India. The people in India, they can eat it. We come from, I don't know, wherever the Chazanish came from, we're not allowed to eat their animals, you now get a Masorah from somebody else. So therefore, since you're not getting a Masorah from somebody else, too bad that the people from India eat it. We don't have that Masorah. We're not allowed to eat it. Okay? So let's and that was the end. They did not bring Zebus and Teretz Yisrael. Well, they listened to the Chazanish and did not import them from Madagascar. Now, Let's pause for a second and think what the Chazon just said. He said, you need to have a Masorah, and we won't take the Masorah from people from India. Now, let's just think about this. First of all, his reading of the Shach is a Machlokes. Many people read the Shach as saying that you are allowed to, that you don't need a Masorah for animals. Okay, that's how many people hold. That's in fact how the American Hashkafas all hold, because in America, if you ever ate American buffalo or bison, okay, that's an animal that does not have a Masorah to it. But we eat it, the American Hashkafas give Hashkafas to it because it's kosher. It has split hooves and chews its cud. So we eat it, even though there's no Masorah, then it's kosher. Okay. Second is, the Shach held that not only does the Shach hold that you, the Shach holds that you can get a Masorah from a different community. Remember, I told you, the Mechaber holds you can, but the Shach holds you can't get it from a different community. So, over here, so even if you want to tell me that usually you want to be Machmer like the Mechaber, on birds, you want to be Machmer for the Mechaber, that's because in a bird, if you're going to get the wrong information from this guy, you could be eating a treif bird. The only way you know it's kosher is because the guy told you. So if you're making, it, maybe we should be Machmer and not take a Masorah from somebody else, because if I trust him, I might be eating treif. But if I trust the guy from India that a zebu is kosher, I know I'm not eating treif. I know it has split hooves and chews its cud. I can figure out myself that it's a kosher animal. But maybe there's a minimum that I'm violating by eating this animal. So maybe if we, even if we're usually machmir to not take on someone else's masorah, that's where you, if you take his masorah, you might be making a mistake at eating treif. Here I know I'm not eating treif. Here I know that the animal is kosher, has split hooves and chews its cud. So it's an extra step to say that even in this case, you should not take someone's Masorah. And
okay, but in the absence, again, going back to what the Shulchan Aruch said about birds, you do have certain criteria. The Rama added the added requirement of there being a Masorah.
Right.
So, I mean, maybe nitpicking, but it's not really treif if the animal fulfills those four criteria.
Okay, so but you have, you're right, you are correct, but you have to remember, the Rama said that because mistakes happen in times of the Gemara, that they used those four signs and they didn't have a Masorah. And they made a mistake. They ate treif for a long time. So when we're asking for a Masorah, we're saying...
What established that the animal was treif?
The bird?
They didn't fulfill the criteria?
They eventually found out that it was a Dervis, even though they had always thought it wasn't.
Which went back to
right. So what happened is that we're... You're right that it's only a Chumrah because we have the four signs, but it's a Chumrah based on a concern that we might be making a big mistake in eating treif. As opposed to this animal, there isn't a question that the animal is kosher. It has split hooves and chews its cud. You can't go wrong on that. It's very clear, yet we're just, it's sort of like a minute to look for it. So we're all, the worst we're doing is the minute. But there's another thing, which is that when they shech zebu animals, okay, when they shech zebu animals, there's, when you shech an animal, excuse me, aside that it has to be a kosher species and it has to have shechitim, it can't be a treif. It can have certain problems with it that would make it sick. So in a regular shechita, you get maybe 60-70% of the animals are kosher, maybe 30-40% of the animals are glot kosher, and maybe 10-20% of the animals are Beis Yosef glot, okay? Which is a higher standard to know that the animal is really kosher. We call halak, Beis Yosef, okay? In zebu animals, because of just, I guess, their nature and how hardy they are, they get 80-90% of the animals come out Beis Yosef kosher. Okay, so if you're shechting these animals, you have to realize that by saying I don't want a zebu, by saying I don't want to take the zebu, you're yet all, for all these reasons to be machmir, say for all you have to be very machmir and not take it, but you're giving up something very large on the other side. You're giving up the chance to have meat that's going to be easily without treifas, with regularly, remember, 80-90% Beis Yosef kosher, as opposed to what we're getting. We have to, you know, we're much lower down, and we have to pick out, and this one is good, and it's on the border, maybe we should take it, we should, there, it's easy, the animals come one after the other, come basis of class. So, but all of this, will say, I don't know if this last part Chazon Ish knew, because he doesn't say that in the Truma, but let's even say he knew that was Chazon Ish's call, that he said that we should not take it. That was stage one of this trial, okay? Stage one was, they decided that, no, they're not going to take it. Okay? And I repeat that the American Hashkachas did not take this, and even many Eretz Yisrael Hashkachas did not take this. Okay. Stage two was like this. Something else was going on that the Chazon Ish doesn't show any signs that he knew what was going on about this thing, which is as follows. I told you that zebu meat doesn't taste very good. Okay, so in the 1930s and 1940s, American, I don't know what they call scientists, we'll call them for lack of a better word, bred zebus, and they came out that if you breed... The zebu has two names. We use the word zebu, but it has another name. For this, you need to know the other name, Brahm, someone mentioned. the Brahm, if you mix 3/8 Brahm and 5/8 Angus, okay, you figure out how you do that, I don't know. 3/8 Brahm and 5/8 Angus, you get an animal which is, becomes a contraction of those two names, you get a called a Brangus, okay? You get a Brangus, okay, and that animal has, as we say in Yiddish, has alamalus, okay? The animal, it's a black animal, it looks very much like a zebu, like a Angus cattle. It doesn't have drooping ears, doesn't have this extra piece of skin, it has a tiny little hump only, and the meat tastes good. So it's alamalus. This animal can handle the cold, can handle the hot. This is a great animal, okay?
I'm getting to that in a second.
So that's where I'm headed. Okay. So they bred this animal, and they created this thing called Brangus, which was a big success that they're able to breed it. Now, that brings up two shilas, which is what you're referring to, two shilas that the Chazanish doesn't talk about, and we don't have any reason to even think he knew about it. Okay, this was just going on right at that time. This was like just starting to happen, which is, the Gemara says that kosher and non-kosher animals cannot breed and produce viable offspring. Well, if a zebu could breed with an Angus and produce viable offspring, then the Masorah of an Angus transfers over to the zebu. Because the Gemara says that if you breed with a kosher animal and produce offspring, then you're kosher, then you must be kosher. If you didn't know, you would know that this is kosher. Well, then if an Angus is kosher, zebu must be kosher also.
Why is that not a simon?
Well, the Masorah is that Angus is kosher. The Gemara tells us anybody who can breed with Angus and make a viable offspring, that person is also kosher. So I'm going to transfer the Masorah from Angus onto Zebu because I just proved, I used the Gemara, used a Gemara principle, I transferred that Masorah from here to there.
Can we say it was a Machlokes after
Onyam? No. By birds. The Gemara says that by animals, a kosher and non-kosher animal can breed and produce a viable offspring. That's a machlokes not quite whether it applies to birds, but by animals, it for sure applies. So I could transfer the Masorah from Angus onto Zebu. And even more than that is, let's say you don't like that. Let's say you won't say like that. I told you, but there's a machlokes not quite. What would happen if a kosher and a non-kosher animal would breed? What would be the din of that offspring? Whereas one parent who's kosher and one parent who's not kosher. Okay, and many achrayim hold that animal is also kosher. So even if you don't want to transfer the Masorah, there's reason to say that the Brangus is kosher because one of his parents is kosher, or 3/8 of his parents, I don't know, 4/5, whichever one it was, of his parents were kosher. And so that he should be kosher also. Okay, so now this, there's no indication in the Chazanish that he even considered, that he even knew this piece of information, and we could potentially say that even the Chazanish, who said that zebus are not kosher, would have said, when he would have known this information, might have said that it is kosher. He might have been able to say that zebus are kosher after he would have heard this information. Okay? So, when this came up again a couple of years ago, you'll hear, it came up again that a lot of the shechita in Eretz Yisrael, a lot of the meat that goes to Eretz Yisrael, and some of the meat that comes here, but a lot of the meat that comes here at Seoul comes from South America. Okay. In South America, you can't have Hereford and Angus cattle. They don't survive. It's not the right climate for them. So they have zebus and Branguses over there. That's what they have over there. So a couple of years ago, the Israeli hashgachas all of a sudden found out that the meat that they had been eating was zebu and Brangus. So here, they all were proudly saying that we hold up Chazanish that you're not allowed to, you know, use zebu, and there are no zebus in Eretz Yisrael. Now, we wouldn't dare bring the zebus into Eretz Yisrael, but they were eating it anyhow.
Well, they were eating it anyhow.
And they were eating it because the Shechitas were sending it back. Now, how it came to be that the Shechitas didn't realize this, either they had Branguses. I don't know if they had zebu Branguses. It's not clear which one they have. Either they had Branguses, which look normal. When you see a Brangus, you see the picture, it looks basically like an Angus cow. It looks fine, like a normal, regular cow. Or they saw the cow looked a little different, and the Shechtim asked the local Rabbanim, this Jewish community, and said, you allowed to eat this? And they said, yeah. Just like in America, we don't all eat the Chazanish. Show me this cow. Almost like they ate the turkeys. Like this cow, of course not eat this cow. They ate it. And all of a sudden somebody found out that this is the famous zebu that we don't eat. And they're like, ha-ha, we're eating it anyhow. We'll go figure. So, but now, at this point, it was already, I think, known. This is a few years ago. So we will assume that the people at the time who were answering the shiloh should have known that zebu and Brangus are breeding together. Okay? Now, this is not a, so to speak, a secret. This is from the 1930s. They've been breeding zebus and Anguses together to make Branguses. So now, not only do we have, in order to say the Chazon Shishita, not only do you have to say many Chumras, as we had mentioned, but now we have an extra thing. That now that it's breathed together, we have a transferred Masorah to make it kosher. We have more reasons to make it kosher. But, so what happened is, that the Rabbonim at the time said, no more Zibus. How can it be? The Chazon Ish said, no Zibus. We can't have it. How can it be? They're sneaking it in on us, and blah, blah, blah. No Zibus. It's all trade. Now, the American Hashkochas...
Did they carry that to Brangestu?
Yeah, no Zibus. The whole works. The American Hashkochas basically ignored the whole Shaila, because I told you, the American Hashkochas are giving Hashkochas on American Buffalo. Most people don't hold like the Chazon Ish altogether. To get the start. We I told you, there's 20... You know, a whole bunch of reasons not to hold like him, even if you hold like him. You told him not to hold like him. So American Hashkachas basically ignored it. But the Israeli Hashkachas got very upset. And then, now we come to the last phase, which is, this is a short phase, which was, all of a sudden, they were very upset about it, and all of a sudden, it was like someone turned the lights off. It was quiet. There was no more talking about this thing. It was all of a sudden, there was big tumults, as only some people can tumult, and all of a sudden, that's it. All of a sudden, there was no more tumult anymore. And what happened? What happens like this? In this part, even if you knew that there were three letters in the Chazon Ish, and even if you knew what Herzog wrote about all this stuff, most people don't know this part. And this is, we're getting to the very end, and by now we're down to figuring out what I told you. Even if we make it to the end, you'll find out why even the vegetarians have to do the shadow, which is like this. There's a rule that if you want to make cloth for tefillin, or for Sefer Torah, or for a mezuzah, it has to come from a kosher animal. Okay, it doesn't have to come from a shechted animal, it has to come from a kosher animal. Okay, I said almost everybody, because there was a lady here, she didn't wear tefillin this morning, although she probably has a mezuzah in her house. But she left already. But so well, if you put on tefillin this morning, it has to come, the cloth has to come from a kosher animal. Okay, well, in Eretz Yisrael, where a lot of the stuff is written, they don't have the cow, the animals in themselves. There's not much animals grow, you know, being raised here. They got their stuff from, I hear different versions of the story, either South America or Australia, where they used to get the, now, there isn't much oversight on this, because, again, it doesn't have to be a shechted animal. It just has to be a kosher breed of animal. I mean, you can't get it from a horse, you have to get it from a cow. Okay, so there wasn't a tremendous amount of oversight, and this has been going on for decades, long before there was shechit in, like, these places. So, I don't know if they had, who oversaw it, whatever it was, but they found out that all the cloth, every place were coming from these kind of animals, from zebras. I mean, listen, they might not taste good. That has nothing to do with whether you can write a good period of So they, all of a sudden they found out that, lo and behold, everyone's fine. Okay, but that was only one part of the story. The other part of the story was that they found out that they had years before, probably right around the time of the Chazon Ish, had brought dairy cows from Holland to start up a dairy industry in Eretz Yisrael. And those cows couldn't handle the climate. What can you imagine what they brought? They brought dairy cows like they have in what's called in Iowa. You know, what do you think? The nice, these nice good cows that can handle, you know, 30 degrees for months on end. Okay? That's what you bring. But that's not Eretz Yisrael. So they realized that the animals were not making it. Okay, the animals were you know, dying like flies. They weren't handling it. So, you know, this is a Shiloh. We're not gonna talk about the Shiloh part of it, but they artificially inseminated those animals with zebu. In order to make their offspring more hardy and able to handle the climate in Eretz Yisrael. So now, I said to you, they listened to the Chazon Ish and they didn't bring the zebus in. But they came in the luggage. They got them in, they sort of snuck in the back without the Chazon Ish seeing. They weren't marching down the streets, but they in the labs, they were in there. Okay, now that's a Shiloh, how that would affect the conscience of the children. Okay, but so it turned out, but that the milk you can only eat milk from a kosher animal. Okay, so anybody who drank milk negates the shalom. So the milk that they were getting, our milk is probably from regular cows, but their milk in Eretz Yisrael, the dairy industry in Eretz Yisrael, was using milk that had zebu, you know, interlaced all over the place. So the later tshuvas came out that said that kfar nohagu lahakel about this shiloh, even though they wouldn't eat, if a zebu walked into Bnei Brak, they would not use that cow, they would not take it, because Chazon Ish said not to, but in all these kind of other funny ways they have, so I can't tell, it could be that the Israeli Hashkachas still encourage their Hashkachas to stay away from actual zebus, okay, but especially, I would think, especially for like Branguses, which are breeds of them and things like that, they're taking, and for sure not in the public anyhow, taking a quieter stand to it, to take it, okay. Thank you for staying so long.